Amazing. It is 12 o'clock. Tarrant County 911 District Board of Managers meeting, February 22nd, 2021. We'll move straight through to the agenda. Any agenda announcements?
No, sir.
Okay, so we'll move to consent agenda. Have a motion from the board?
Move approval of the consent agenda.
A motion made by Mr. Brunson. Have a second?
Second.
I'm sorry, I can't see everyone.
Say aye.
All those in favor, raise your hand and say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. All right, let's move to item number four. PSAP Assistance Program. Shannar?
Travis, are you muted? Okay.
Anyone else picking up that feedback?
Yeah.
Okay.
So for Fort Worth, the first one is going to be for Iron Horse Chairs, $25,000. And then the second one is also for Fort Worth for computers, display, and cabling for new workstations for $49,000.
Okay, thank you. Any comment from the board? Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
And a sec?
Second.
Okay.
That's to both A and B.
A and B. The motion is for both A and B and seconded for A and B.
And show Chief Davis abstaining?
Yes, that should be correct. That's my plan.
Okay. All those in favor, raise your hand and signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No opposed. Motion carries.
I will be abstention, please.
With one extension from Chief Davis. Okay, Shannar, let's go to section five, purchases over 25,000.
Okay, these were for the laptops for GIS. As you know, with COVID, we had everybody working from home, and that included our GIS team. They use laptops that we had designated for something else during this time. So we're going to go ahead and get them laptops that are much more robust, which is what GIS needs for imagery, as well as a normal process of getting new workstations, two monitors for three of the positions in the office.
Understood. Do you have a motion or any comment from the board?
I have a question. Shannar, are the people who are getting the three workstations also getting laptops?
Yes. Yes. They don't have laptops at their desk that they can take home. They have workstations due to the capacity that they need for GIS imagery. And so, like last week when they had to go home, they are using our version of a laptop, which is much smaller and has much less capacity. So we want to get them laptops that they can work from home that have the capacity that they need.
So why do they need two devices? I'm asking because the county went to one device policy because of the overhead in keeping devices updated and also the licensing. So it's just a question.
That's fine. The desktops that they have, the workstation that they have, are very robust and have a lot more on it that they work with in the office and that work with at home. And definitely they can't take those home to work from home. I guess I could speak with Kevin and Monty to see if the laptop is enough for the office, but my understanding is what they do in the office and the additional hardware that they have, that it wouldn't be duplicating the same.
And so in looking at the specs on those five laptops, it looks like they've spec'd them out well to where if they're not able to remote into their workstations at the office, they would still be able to continue work remotely. Is that correct?
Yes, still everyone's, for example, last week, everyone made access to our VPN to the network.
I guess to Rick's point, long-term, the transportability of the office issue is probably something for you to consider. But I would think during this sort of short-term environment that I think this is a logical solution. But, you know, to Rick's point, I walk around with a Surface Pro. It is my office computer, it's my home computer, and it's the full service unit. But I think your business model a little more sophisticated, a little more complex. But if that is a potential option, you may want to, you know, you have Kevin investigated or whatever. But I think this is a relatively small amount of workstations. I don't see a conflict at this time, unless someone else does. So is there a motion on the issue?
So moved, Davis.
I'll second, Aubrey.
Okay, so we have a motion by Chief Davis, a second by Aubrey, and we'll put up the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, we'll move to item six, the presentations.
This will be the annual audit report, and it'll be done by Ms. Lou.
Yes, my name is Paula Lau with Patillo Brown Hill, and I'm here today to present to you the annual financial report for fiscal year 2020. I believe each of one of you do have a copy of the report with you as well, an electronic one. Is that the case? Okay, great. We did perform the audit this year for fiscal year 2020, and as you can imagine, things were done a little bit differently than years in past just because of the pandemic. But I want to thank everyone at the 911, the district, with everything that they did to be able to make it possible for us to conduct the audit and still as well be able to keep everyone safe at the time during these unprecedented times. So I really appreciate that and everything they did to help out and make that a possibility. Did a lot more things electronically, did a lot of Zoom meetings, did share information securely through a portal that we have as well. So it was definitely something that we were able to take care of this year, even though we had to do things quite differently and think a little bit more outside of the box as well. But I wanted to do today is provide you some of the audit results for this fiscal year, and just to point out a couple of highlights within the financial report as well. As you can see there, you will find our independent auditor's reports. And what we have done there was we have rendered an unmodified opinion on the financial statements, and that opinion is the highest opinion that can be rendered as well. So great news to everyone at the district. For fiscal year, there's also a page within the comprehensive annual financial report that is the award for financial excellence that was received for 2019's report. And that was is included in this particular comprehensive annual financial report this year, in this report for 2020, we anticipate being submitted to GFOA and we'll get the same award as well. That's great. What that does, GFOA has a few more things that are required to be presented in the CAFR, And what it does is enhances the district's transparency as well. But in the reports, one of the things I wanted to look at is just looking, it's on page 4 of the reports, of the actual comprehensive annual finance report. And there you'll find the statement of net position and governmental fund balance sheet. Page 6, you can see at the end of the fiscal year, the district did have total fund balance of approximately $17 million. But fund balance did decrease this particular fiscal year on the next page, page 7, by $4.1 million. But that was due to planned capital expenditures for PSAP equipment, as well as additional work on some of the call centers. As far as additional audit results as well, towards the very end of the report, we issue another letter in accordance with government auditing standards. And I'm happy to let you know that we do not have anything to bring to your attention in accordance with those standards as well. Those standards require us to, if we come across some instances where processes aren't quite where they need to be, then we are required to bring those type of issues to the board. I'm happy to let you know that we don't have those things to bring to your attention today. So, but that's a summary of the audit report and our audit results as well. But if anyone has any questions, I'm more than happy to answer those today too.
Any questions from the board?
Not a question, but a comment for our newer board members. I will traditionally submit this report as a receive and file to the commissioner's court. It cuts down a whole lot of discussions at budget time if the bean counters already have the detailed information. So just offering that as a suggestion or a thought.
Thank you, Rick. Anyone else? Okay, I don't think we have any questions, and really appreciate again the report on the audit, and we're very pleased to have no findings, and so that's good news for us. We want to keep it going. So
absolutely, thank you, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you, Paula.
Okay, then we'll move forward to item number 7, record management policy. Record management policy.
Yes. So we, as we mentioned in the last board meeting, the record management policy for Texas changed probably about 2 years ago now. We were made aware of it 2 months ago. And so we had to, for our audit purposes and for our, and to be in compliance, we had to have some sort of policy. So we went ahead and basically took the ones, followed the ones that we saw online, and we presented that to the board for review our last meeting. And we just asked that the board allow us to go ahead and adopt this policy officially for our records.
I just have one question. So in reviewing it, I know you were saying that this was the template that you guys pulled and just kind of plugged in the district's information. But it talks about in section 4 how the executive assistant serves as the records management officer and is responsible for drafting or developing policy and procedures about the maintenance preservation, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a sub policy that's going to be attached to this?
No, it would be, for example, if we decided to do something different than what the state is, we can't shorten it, but we can always make something longer. Like, let's say something that the state only requires you to save for 2 years, we could say internally we're going to save it for 3. At this time, we don't have any such policies, but that would be an example.
Okay. So if that were the case, then the executive assistant is responsible for drafting the policy and procedures for retention?
Right. And we would, of course, vote for board approval.
So I would think in reality, the executive assistant is assigned that responsibility, but the responsibility still would land with the executive director.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Any other comments? So, Shannar, are you asking for a motion regarding the policy?
That is correct.
Okay. So, to the board, do we have a motion to adopt this policy?
I make a motion to adopt the policy.
Thank you, Mayor.
Second.
We have a second from Mr. Brunson. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. So we'll move to item number 8, the executive director report.
Okay. I don't think anyone has to be told what we dealt with last week. I moved to Texas to get away from this white, wet stuff, and that didn't happen. So our team on the personnel level was suffering with everyone else, whether it be loss of electricity or water, very cold temperatures, and et cetera. But we managed to keep plugging along, everyone working from home, taking care of whatever was needed here, either physically on site or remotely throughout the PSAPs. The main thing that we got out of last week, if we look at the good side, is the resiliency and the redundancy of our network showed up 100%. We had several cities that lost their generator power, and because we had our UPSs there, we were able to keep the PSAP equipment going until the generator power was restored. With the exception of one small city that we had to do a manual reroute, everyone else was back up and running. We didn't actually have any outages or any loss of ability to process calls. We did have some folks that struggled a little bit as far as the 10-digit numbers and gateways. We were able to help them manually, even with their admin lines, to reroute that so that they wouldn't lose it until we could get them back up at 100%. So, which was an exceptionally important thing, because we looked at the numbers, and as a whole, the district took three times the amount of calls on the 15th and the 16th than it normally has done. So that was an incredible amount of call volume. The fire department, the separated or isolated fire department agencies were absolutely swamped. So taking on that additional call volume did not stress the system at all. I have no doubt it stressed the people, but not the system, and the system worked fine. We are our backup fueling site in south or by the resource center. They did lose power, but we fortunately had enough fuel in our generator. I think at one point we went 10 hours without power, and we were able to get that refueled as well as the main one here in Central. So everything that we set up, as Kevin says, several years worth of work to get us here, it did its job exactly the way it was designed. So, but I will tell you, we worked hard last week despite that. Right behind me, the roofers just left because my ceiling leaked, and I walked in on Friday to ceiling tiles on the floor and a soaked floor. At some point, the battery for our front door failed, and Fort Worth was very generous to send two officers here to sit out here until I could get in. And Johnson Control came out to fix that. Other than that, everything else was able to be handled remotely, and the team did a really good job despite the circumstance. Many of them did not have power, but they have backup UPSs from the office that kept their stations going so they could work where they could. And then folks had their own generators and stuff that they used for backup. So the team worked hard despite the circumstances, and I like to express my gratitude that they hung in there, many of them for hours without electricity, and we were still able to get things accomplished.
Thank you all. We appreciate it.
Any other comments from the board?
One other note, we are going to be doing a survey, a new survey that we did. I believe it was 2019 we did one, 2018, 2019. We're going to do another survey that we're going to put out to the public and in conjunction with NCO and NCT 911, like we did the last time. So once we get the questions and stuff together, we'll forward that. But if you guys have any questions that you would like us to ask the citizens, feel free to email me those. Ones that we're considering right now have to do with COVID. Now we have the snowstorm, ice storm. So there may be some other questions that we may think that we might want to put out there for folks to answer as far as 911 services go.
Yeah, this is Robert. I'd like to make a comment, though. I'll just call myself a civilian because that's what I am. But I really appreciate everything that all of the first responder teams did because, one, you'd be surprised how helpful it was to us at AT&T, but personally, it was something I never had to worry about. So awesome job to everybody. And very appreciative of that. It's why I love this community. Great job.
Well, that's really nice of you to say, Robert. I think all first responders, we're all solely dependent on the 911 system, and I'm very proud that we have more than sufficient capacity to weather us through something as terrible as what we just went through, and the fact that our backup systems kept our system reliable, because that citizens more than anything depend on a reliable 911 service to get them the help they need when they need it. And I think we're blessed to find that our system's in good financial position. Certainly for the long term now, after some previous decisions this board has made. And then the fact that we're starting to invest and the things we need to make sure that our system is reliable, and that couple that with the fact that we have very good, dedicated, and qualified staff who take care of the system, who manage the system, who care for the system. We're all very fortunate for the good work that Shinar and her team are doing for us. So, Shinar, back to you.
We want to say one thing. As our network at AT&T, it was, quite a bit, but if we've learned one thing in our business, it's that maintenance matters. And it's definitely matters to the 911 team, and it was critical to us keeping our network up. We've enhanced over many, many years our maintenance process, and, it's no different for any of us from an entity's perspective, and it's just absolutely critical when these events come up. So it was huge for us, and I can honestly say that I wasn't as busy as I thought I'd be, and it was thankfully to our maintenance teams, no doubt.
So. Well, thank you all for expressing that, and I echo that. My team really did show up, so we understand the vital role that we play in public safety. We want to make sure we do it well, and I think we really showed that last week. So I appreciate you guys' kind words.
Okay. Well, anything else, Shinar, from the executive director report perspective?
No, sir.
Okay. So I guess we'll move to item number 9, legislative update. Bill.
Good afternoon. First, I want to say I'm sorry for missing last month's meeting. COVID swept through my house, and we were out of commission for a while, but glad to be back. And I have been working in and around the legislature since 2001, and this is the weirdest. I'm never going to use the word unprecedented again because I hate it at this point, but this is the weirdest legislative session I've ever seen. Generally the first 60 days of the session are really low key. It's slow moving, and the legislature can only address whatever items the governor has designated as an emergency. But with COVID-19, it's really changed everything and impacted that. From a practical standpoint, I can't just walk over to the Capitol and walk into any office and request a meeting. Most of the meetings that we're having with staff or members are outside at coffee shops or wherever we can get them to come out of the Capitol. It's just such a lockdown right now with members concerned about COVID. And of course, with last week, you know, the legislature is such a reactive body. I'm getting bill tech, or anytime a bill is filed, I get an alert. And I'm fully expecting for the next 3 weeks to see hundreds of bills related to the winterization of the Texas power system. And the legislature, for better or worse, that's going to be their focus from here on out. And that can work in our favor and against us in a number of ways. But first, since I didn't get to brief you last month, both the Lieutenant Governor and Speaker Phelan have released their committee assignments. In the Senate, our bills will likely go through the Senate Business and Commerce Committee. And Kelly Hancock represents Tarrant County. He's the chair of that committee. That's great for us. In the House, Representative James White from East Texas is the chair of the House Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee. Our team has a great relationship with Representative White. I think he'll be a great advocate for us. And also on that committee, there are 9 members. Tony Tenderholt from Arlington serves on that committee. So that's another positive for us. The bill filing deadline is March 12th. And I haven't seen any official numbers, but I can just tell you from experience, the number of bills that have been filed this session compared to previous sessions feel way down. I'm sure it's all due to COVID, but I expect that to really ramp up until March 12th. As far as the 911 wireless funding bill goes, we being the myself and the Alliance lobby team have had some very positive conversations and Zoom meetings with AT&T's leadership, their lobbyists and their attorneys on this issue and our bill drafts. Last session, I think AT&T took the position that they weren't going to fight us, but they weren't going to really step in and help us push this. And that seems to have changed dramatically this session. We've had some extremely positive conversations and meetings where we are figuring out how we can work together to push this across the finish line. We've had meetings with Senator Hancock's staff and with Representative White. And it looks like, I can't say for certain, but I feel almost positive that Representative White will file the bill for us in the House. Since he's chair of that committee, that's where our bill will go through. Barring something unforeseen, but we feel really strongly about that and very positive about that. And it looks like at this point, we'll probably try to push it through the House first, but everything's fluid at this point. And going back to last week and the impact it's going to have on the legislature, it's great if we want to kill bills. Any bad bills that are coming up, it's going to be much harder to get those passed because the legislature is going to be focused on this. On the flip side, pushing a bill like our 911 reliability funding issue, it's going to be a little bit more challenging, but it's a green light until it's red. That's the attitude we have to take. But other than that, we're tracking bills. I haven't seen any bills that have given me great concern at this point, but we're tracking them, and we'll certainly alert Shinar and her staff if anything comes up that we have real concern over. And that's really all I have at this point.
So do you think, based on current events, I would think that the necessity for 911 to be stable and funded and supported should weigh in our favor to some degree until there's a red light, to your point.
Absolutely.
And if you send something that we need to do personally, you'll certainly let us know that.
Yes, sir.
And you can certainly reach out to the folks working next to to see if we can help in any way.
Absolutely.
Any comments from the board? Any questions for Bill?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Have you seen any traction or effort to allow the 911 call takers to become eligible for the first responders diversion courts?
A bill has been filed. Representative Guerin filed a bill about 3 weeks ago.
Good.
And it has not been, I have to check and make sure it's been referred to committee. I don't believe it has at this point, but that bill last session had a great response in committee. It just got held up through the timing of the session, but it was voted out unanimously last session in that committee. So I don't expect it to have any issues going forward.
Outstanding.
And then, that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Yes, sir.
If there's no other comments, we'll go ahead and move on to next item. Shannara, do we have an executive session item?
Yes, we do.
And how do we intend to manage that through this process here, Zoom?
Last time we just had everybody log off that's not supposed to be on and stop the recorder. And then we start recording again once we're complete.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for all that you all do. Have a great week.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Hey, Don, this is Jim Davis. I'm on the phone here. I got kicked off of the WebEx and I couldn't log back in, so I'm on the phone.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. So Bill's going to drop off, and I guess we just let everyone drop off and then we'll continue. Or, Shannara, do you have other directions for us on that? You want us to all log off or
no?
Or we just stay on? Can you see everyone, Shannara?
I'm shutting down.
Get this recorder to pause. There we go.
Okay, so the board will move into executive session for section 551.071 for legal consultation, or section 551.074 or section 418.183F. So it is 12:43 p.m. The board is now out of executive session and we're back into open session. And we'll open up for any comments, public comments, but I believe there's no one here for public comment. So on the schedule, our next board meeting is scheduled for March 15th, 2021, 12 p.m. Is there any comments from the board before we adjourn? Okay, the board stands adjourned. Everyone be safe and we'll see you next month.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.